Welcome back to the Every Other Sunday podcast, Euros special, kind of semi-final special. I'm Jay McIntosh with Daniel Childs, as always. And Daniel, mate, England are into the final of the Euros. How do you feel?
Pretty amazing, as expected. I think if you'd have told me way back after Euro 2016, England would make the semi-finals of the next two major tournaments, I would have phoned the police, because you know it would have been a mental idea back then, given how poor the England side were in Euro 2016, how disorganised we looked. But what Southgate has done over the previous two tournaments has just been remarkable, really. I think not only in terms of what's actually gone on the pitch with the team unity and actually making England in a very basic way look like a team that have actually played together before a tournament and know their roles, and there is a sense of cohesion and plan there, but also just reconnecting the nation. It sounds like a very cheesy thing to say, but reconnecting the nation with the team, because I think with English football, and maybe this is the case, you know, I can only speak towards English football. Maybe it's the case in other countries too. Me and my dad were having this conversation around like tribalism and, you know, the club game over here. And I think maybe we're a little bit blinded by the fact that probably after France won the World Cup, when Liga picks up again, you know, you have PSG and Monaco fans going at each other. You know, that doesn't change because their national team won the World Cup. But for years, it felt like the tribal aspect of the Premier League sometimes would get in the way of England and it would make it not that fun. So to reconnect every player I love in this squad, I really do. And I think that they're also just a great representation of the nation. And I think there's a lot of stuff that gets thrown in with the national team that I don't think is their responsibility, unfortunately. And unfortunately, politics, I think, gets used from all sides to try and weaponized the current first team, and it's people try and use whatever it is to suit their narrative, unfortunately, in extreme directions. And unfortunately, like, that's something that the national team has to deal with, that the club game doesn't have to deal with. But I think the way Southgate has handled all of that nonsense from day one and all of the players have dealt with it has been truly extraordinary. And I think they're such an amazing bunch of individuals, of footballers, but also I think the best representation of the current nation, and that's why I think everyone loves the team so much.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be the bearers for things such as race relations, identity politics, the wealth gap, anything like that. It seems to fall on them. Obviously, what Rashford's been through in terms of his various political campaigns, as well as trying to enhance child education and improving reading rates. So, yeah, on that side of things, they're just a credit. And they're just bloody excellent at football, aren't they? I've defended Southgate with the decisions he's made throughout this tournament. I said early on that the only thing that might catch him is if he's overly sentimental, then there could be issues there. But that hasn't been the case at all. People need to understand that you can't play Guardiola football in a tournament like this. It's very, very, very rare that you see something like that happen. Obviously, Pickford now, Golden Glove winner, one goal conceded, which is pretty astonishing, to be honest.
He's a different keeper for England. I remember months back when we were speaking about Chelsea versus Everton, and I remember you were a bit like that with Pickford does the inverse of what you're supposed to do for England. You're supposed to be really good for your club and not go for England. It feels like Pickford becomes a better goalkeeper for England. He seems to, all of the problems he has at club level seem to go away. And that's been the case since Euro 18. World Cup 2018 and the Nations League. I think he had a really good time there and he made some big saves despite the fact England lost. I think, he's been brilliant. And I've defended Southgate since the first game. I could see what he was trying to do. I think he quite clearly has gone in with the right method, not only in terms of probably looking at the previous two tournament winners, looking at France, looking at Portugal and going, you don't need to be amazing in the group stage. There is this myth, I don't know where it came from, that England have to play this Brazil 70s style play that hasn't been done since. I mean, the history of football, the history of international tournaments, a lot of the time it is quite reactive. We've just come off the back of a ridiculously intense season with a majority of players in our team who played in a congested Premier League season. So the idea that it was just going to be free flowing, like the problem, the criticism around the Croatia game was just baffling to me from day dot. I couldn't understand after that game how negative
it was. Just emotion, though. It was just emotion. That's what it was. There was no real, I don't think there was any like real damaging tactical like breakdown. I think it was people just upset because it was so close.
But like we'd lost to this team in 2018. Like everyone before the Croatia game was saying how dangerous Croatia were. And then everyone after was turning around and going, oh, Croatia, you know, we should have battered them. You know, what is it? Like England, in the problem, the whole baffling thing around the criticism of Southgate in the three group games were, and this became even more evident when you started to see France get knocked out, when you saw Portugal get knocked out, and of course us beating Germany, was this idea that, you know, England in the past have been naive. We haven't approached tournaments in an intelligent way. We haven't managed moments in games really well, because we haven't been a cohesive team, but we also haven't had the coaching strategy behind it to really implement a system that works. You know, too often it feels like England have been done by teams who look a lot more intelligent than us, but that hasn't been the case in this tournament. I think Southgate's realised defence is his weakest area, or at least going into the tournament it was, and he's worked on that. And throughout the tournament, the expression of the attackers has started to come through a lot more. And he's had some incredible attacking players, you know, particularly Raheem Sterling. Raheem Sterling has been world class in this tournament. He's been elite in this tournament. He has.
He's a world class baller, mate. He's a world class baller. He is.
And I think it's great for him because there was so much speculation at the back end of the Man City year. Didn't feel like he was in the best form. You know, is his future in question there? But he's a stunning tournament for him personally. Whatever happens on Sunday, individually, it's been such a brilliant tournament for him. So the criticism of Southgate, even after the Scotland game and the Czech Republic game, was just baffling to me. It felt like people were just going way overboard and wanting entertaining football, as you saw bigger nations, or at least nations that were more favoured in this tournament, start to stumble. And I think every decision Southgate has made has been vindicated to get us to a final.
Yeah, completely, completely. And as well, well, firstly on Sterling, if England win the Euros, he'll win the player of the tournament, I think. If not, I reckon it'll probably be Jorginho. And that would also be fair enough. But if we just run through it quickly before we get into the game. England with a back four is Pickford, Walker or Trippier, right? Stones, Maguire, Shaw, Mount, Phillips, Rice, Sterling, Kane, and then
one of Sancho or Saka in this tournament mainly. Foden, yeah. Grealish, of course, you know, is more of a bench, like an impact player.
I would argue that in any England starting 11, at least 8 of those players could be their club's captain. Sterling is City's captain, usually. Kane, Spurs, Henderson, Rice, Maguire. Pickford could be. K-Trips has won the armband at Atletico. It goes on. Mount has won it at Chelsea. Like, it goes, Calvin Phillips won it at Leeds. It goes on and on and on and on. Like, individually, that we're so full of leadership and actual focused leadership that other teams don't have. And that's not to say that we're the best team, because, you know, I think this tournament, Italy have been the best team. But we're a team that, you know, 80% of the starting 11 anytime is their club's captain or potentially vice-captain. That's a really interesting way of looking at things, and that's both young and old. And then you look at players like Saka, who, if stays at Arsenal, will probably wear an armband. Grealish wears that armband at Villa. Foden, in the future, if he stays at City, which he will do, will wear the armband. Yeah, it's all of these little things. You know, Reece James, everyone's saying Reece James could be a captain at Chelsea one day. It's so simple like that. It's really that simple. Like, they're full of leaders. Everyone's unified. Everyone's friends. And what Southgate's done, and, you know, people are going to roll their eyes at this comparison, but I just want to explain it a bit. It's a little bit like Zidane, in the sense that tactically, perhaps he's not the most cutting edge of managers. But what he's done is he's facilitated the growth of a group over a period of time to allow them to be as successful as that group can be. Obviously, Zidane has had major successes with incredible players. Southgate's close, and he's got closer, and he's the best England manager of our lifetime, for sure. And that's not even, there's no doubt about that. And he's been able to break down barriers that other people haven't. And he's been able to make decisions that have been tough on certain players, but they've always been vindicated. And everyone loves being in England. England's a positive place now. It's not a place where you see the sun popping up, scrutinising Rooney or whoever else. And it's a healthy area to be. So, you know, credit to him and all the team, Steve Holland as well, for making intelligent decisions at the right time every single game. And obviously England are in the final and we want them to win. But my goodness, they've done everyone proud getting there. And something of a great team in a tournament is when they get better every single game. And England, every single game, have got better. And personally, with Italy, I thought they were the second best team against Spain. So there are chances there that England can get at. And you know, we can come on to that in a minute. But if you want to look at the game, firstly, I mean, we don't have too long because it's going to be a short pod. So let's maybe just highlight some key issues. Firstly, I think it's quite harsh that Pickford's getting a bit of criticism for that free kick. The free kick's mad. The free kick is mad.
Do you know what it is? It's just, we've discussed this on the pod before. I'm getting a bit tired of the overanalysis of goalkeepers now. Like, it feels like a lot of great strikes now. And especially on a panel of pundits, usually, that doesn't have a goalkeeper within them.
Do you know, when Joe Hart's on, it's really interesting.
I'd like to hear from a goalkeeper. Like, I'd like to hear from someone who deals with those situations. Like, the best angle of the free kick is the one behind the goal. Like, it's of the net looking up.
Yeah.
And Pickford actually moves over pretty quickly. And he puts himself in a position where he could save it. But the strike and the pace on that ball is just...
It's venomous.
It's past him. It's past him before he's... Yeah. If he saves it, it's the save of the tournament, probably. Like, it's just, he has to do something ridiculous to keep it out. And sometimes a free kick is just, if the way I framed it in my review of the game was like, if England score that free kick, we're calling it an amazing free kick, aren't we? I don't think anyone's having a go at Schmeichel for not saving it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Seb Seferblor tweeted about it, but the ball moves from left to right two or three times before it gets to where Pickford is. And I, you have to forgive me, I simply cannot remember the name of the goalkeeper. But I was listening to a goalkeeper talk about it. And he was saying, for the ball to go into the net from a free kick and it land in the net in a relatively central area, that ball has to be moving in unpredictable ways because a keeper will save it. An amateur will save that if the ball goes dead straight in the middle. You know, the point stands. And talking of saves of the tournament, I thought Schmeichel was outstanding. Do you know what? He delivered an FA Cup final performance again. And I was like, this guy is a mentality monster. He had a flawless game and he's a really, really likeable guy. I can't remember who had... It might have been Maguire header.
It was Maguire.
Schmeichel got... Oh my God, that save was unbelievable.
He does. He has that sort of specialty in his game to be able to, because you see a lot of goalkeepers will get to a header like that, but then the momentum of themselves they'll get a hand to it, but it will still go in the back of the net. The fact he's able to scoop it out, and you know, get it away. I remember thinking years back when he was with Leicester in the Championship and thinking all this, you know, the burden of obviously who his dad is and being like, you know, is that going to play on his mentality? But seeing how his career has gone, it's just ridiculous how brilliant he's been. And still the level he's at. I mean, he is, I think any team in the Premier League, like, would
any
almost
team would
be getting an upgrade, you know, in terms of he is right up there with the best goalkeepers in Europe and he's proved
I think he's. I genuinely think he's touching a world-class goalkeeper. And he has been for quite a while. And, you know, like we said about his mentality, he was their best player, for sure. Damsgaard obviously had a good game, but he was their best player. Credit to him, he's worked his way up through the leagues, and that's something that gives you a slight... You see that with players, you know, you begin to see it with Ollie Watkins, but you see it with Vardy, for example. Schmeichel is obviously a case in point as well, where this process of having to earn your stripes and the burden that Schmeichel will have, not many players ever will have a burden as big as that. Because, I mean, Peter Schmeichel is the second best goalkeeper of Premier League history. So it's magical what he's doing and credit to him. And I imagine he'll be at Leicester for a few more years and he would probably cost a bomb to sign despite his age. Because, he's just excellent. Should we just touch on Christensen coming off? Small tear in my eye.
It reminded me a bit of the injury he got against Man City, if you remember back in April. It was kind of it was a brilliant challenge because I think Grealish was behind him, and I think if Christensen doesn't get the touch to it, I think it was Grealish who was away and would have been one on one with Michael. He came up before extra time, didn't he, Christensen?
Yeah, I just
hope for his sake he's going to get 3 weeks off now. I hope for his sake he can, it isn't the worst injury, or at least he can just rest now. Chelsea, from a Chelsea perspective, we're quite lucky that we have another brilliant option in Thiago Silva, but he's also been at an international tournament.
Still is at an international tournament.
So it's, I just hope for his sake he can get going, because, you know, this is the best time of Christensen's career. He's had an amazing tournament once again. He's had an amazing run of form. Like, you track it back pretty much since he came into the team under Tuchel in February. He's been pretty much, other than that mistake against Man City where he got injured, has been faultless, really. So, you know, I it was sad seeing him upset, you know, at the end of the game. And I guess, you know, you do wonder, for Denmark, is this their best opportunity to get to a final? You know, has their moment passed? So I guess that's the tough thing about international football, isn't it? But I don't think he personally can feel any regret about this tournament, because I think he's been sublime, and I think he's going to go, hopefully, to new levels at Chelsea in the Premier League season.
Probably is Denmark's best chance. And it's quite rare that the sails are peaked by the wind of a disaster like that, and they've managed to do themselves very proud. So fair play to them. Just touching on England, Saka, excellent, truly, truly excellent player. I really, really, really would like him at Chelsea. I thought Rice had a good game. Obviously, he's in for some criticism because of the Chelsea rumours. Calvin Phillips, obviously, I knew he was going to stay on because when you play for Leeds, you're as fit as a football player anywhere in the world is. I really, really like how Maguire and Stones are allowed to step out of the defensive line and play the passes. Very similar to what Rudiger does under Tuchel.
Well, because Walker Sterling can sort of shift into that centre-back, right centre-back position. And the fact is, they had Saka.
Walker is OP. Walker is so OP.
Walker's speed, because he's an older player as well. And his speed is just, it doesn't seem to be slowing down. He's just a tremendous athlete. And I think the fact he had Saka on the pitch, because Saka can play a wing-back role. So you would see it sometimes. It would look kind of a free back with Walker shifting into that right centre back position. And it does allow England to push up the pitch a lot more, I think, a lot of the time, if you've got the speed of Walker to cover for you. And yeah, Maguire, what a redemption story for both Maguire and Stones in club and country. Stones, of course, made that major mistake against the Netherlands in the Nations League. Maguire, you know, the problem, he got sent off against Denmark, and that was a low moment in his career earlier in the season. And he's justified all the hype around him in the last tournament. So I think both of them deserve you can go through most players in this team, and even the ones that haven't played that much who have been excellent and have great cameos. Declan Rice, I think both him and Phillips have been brilliant in this tournament. There was criticism earlier in the tournament around them not being that progressive, but a proper... you know, a proper base in midfield that is so strong that gives the freedom to other players to express themselves. And obviously, I'm going to talk a little bit about Rice. I think, he's just been excellent. I think he had a shaky start to the tournament, in particular the Scotland game. I think he had a really good the game against Croatia, I think, was really good. He has had some shaky moments. You forget he is still very young as a midfielder, and both
he's
him
younger
and Phillips
than us,
are. Yeah, so like he's going to have flaws to his game, of course, but I think as the tournament's gone on, you've seen why he's so highly rated in the Premier League, because he does things that don't get picked up. I think that some things that unfortunately won't be picked up by a scout report or like a statistical breakdown of Rice's game, you know, him being able to cover for people, block runs, you know, some things like that just unfortunately in sort of stats don't get picked up, but you see the intelligence within his game to read danger.
Yeah, he's very, very good at making, and he's really good at expanding and contracting space. And that's something that stats don't always pick up on. With Calvin Phillips, I know I'm going to be met with eye rolls from people now because we'll get like charged with English bias. But I can't really understand why Man United would buy Camavinga and not buy Calvin Phillips. Because it seems to me that Camavinga's not a holding midfielder, whereas Phillips can be, and is just, you know, fitter. I'd say he's further in his development. Will have existing relationships within the squad. Maybe a bit more expensive, but he's still very young. You know, a signing like that. If Phillips, no disrespect to Leeds, because Leeds are a massive, massive team, but he could very easily be playing at a top level.
And he's got Premier League experience, which people demean, but it's important in key positions.
Like, oh, massive, yeah. Massive.
And Camavinga is still a very, very young player. I think he could get lost at a big club now. I think he probably
Camavinga's got 10 years and could still be bought by Manchester United and, you know, have a 5-year career there.
He probably needs another year of development. You know, we saw him against Chelsea where he kind
got
of
shredded
he got overrun, and it's not a banner thing. I think he just came up against levels. I mean, but he will be probably a very talented player. And he's also, when you look at him as a player, he's still maybe learning what his best position is. Phillips is not the case. You know, he's very settled. Rice the same. You know where these players are best suited.
And physically, their development is just slightly further along. Camavinga is a beautiful football player. But I really do believe that he is someone that will float in the midfield eight role and be a bit and defensively astute. And, you know, Phillips is a wicked player. And you know, credit to Leeds for really creating him to, you know, to a level that he currently finds himself sat at. I guess we should talk about the goals, because they're a bigger part of the... obviously, we touched on Saka, who's vindicates his start as well, his assist for the own goal that Sterling would have latched onto otherwise, which, you know, would have been Sterling's 16th goal in 21 games for England at the moment, which is just insane. So that's obviously a massive positive. And it was great that I remember seeing on TV after the Denmark goal, Harry Kane tapping his head, telling the players, "Come on now, let's just tap the head and let's just focus." And England returned with fierce intensity and got back into the game straight away. Really important to score before half time. And then the penalty.
The more I see it, the more I think it's a penalty. The first time in instant reaction, I didn't think it was a penalty. I thought it was going to be overturned. But the more I've seen it, I think it's Janssen, isn't it? Who, because he gets sort of two kind of contacts, doesn't he? And I think if I'm a Denmark fan, I may be thinking, like, does the player need to make contact there? I feel like Sterling sort of, it's one of those smart things that Hazard used to do so well, like being able to attract contact, you know, and being, you know, I think that maybe there was a bit of tiredness there. Like Sterling was just running their defence ragged in the last, like the way you could tell that the fitness of Denmark had gone. The fact within, a telling sign for me was like they made three subs instantly, like in the 60th minute, taking off Damsgaard, who was their best player on the night offensively, outfield player, to me was a sure sign that legs were going. You don't make three subs straight away like that. Like, and that changed the game completely. It diminished the threat. You know, Paulson came on and had some nice moments where he dropped a little bit deeper, but never threatened in the same way. Damsgaard never found those areas. And from the 75th minute onwards, England dominated the game pretty much. England pressed Denmark back. And Sterling, what I love about Sterling in this tournament, he's just, at some point, he's just thought to himself, screw it, I'm just going to run with the ball forward and see what happens. Like, I just love the sort of the fearless nature of him in this tournament, because defences have not been able to handle it. Because maybe there is a sense sometimes it's a bit formulaic where, you know, sideways passing, oh, I'm going to pick up the ball here, let's play it safe, hold possession. But you'll see Sterling at some point just go, he'll see a space and he'll just think, I'm driving into it. And defences don't expect it sometimes and they don't know how to handle it, because the moment a player like Sterling gets into the box, danger, because you can't
touch him and he's gone. He can finish as well. He can finish. And you know, from kickoff, he got the ball, beat two players and was sprinting down the line. You saw Denmark be like, oh no. Like he was straight up confirmed as the guy of the game.
Like even Christensen, who's a deceptively fast player, struggled to cope with Sterling at points.
Yeah. because the thing is, his size and his agility is great, and he can tuck in front of you, and then you make the contact, he'll go down, and that's what it is. I thought that Kane's penalty was an absolute shocker.
Kane is one of the best penalty takers in world football, and he just decides at that moment to put the worst penalty you've ever seen in your life, and thank God it came back to him, because it was one of those ones where you knew he was going to score once the rebound, because you were like, he's getting to this first, it's going to go in, you know.
Like I was saying when I was watching, it's like, he's probably going to hit it softly bottom right. I just had it, and it goes like his right, and I was like, oh please, and then it goes in. I was like, okay, good. Obviously Sterling had a chance to make it 3-1 late on. I guess last thing to touch on in terms of breaking down the game, I felt that the Grealish substitution on then off was the right thing to do. But again, that's a decision that if we were to have lost, it would not have been the right thing to do.
But that's the big calls that you have to make as a head coach, like in these moments.
Of course. And you know, bring Kane Trips on, who I like Trippier a lot. Obviously, you've got to always be backing Reece James, but Trippier is a very trusted, very intelligent, very technically gifted footballer. Obviously, he's 30 now, and he was brought on to be a safe pair of hands. That if we needed a free kick taken, he can take it. He's got a good delivery from the corners because Mount came off. He's defensively, obviously, outclasses Grealish in every aspect defensively. So, you know, that was the right move. The game didn't need a Grealish at that point. He had come on and done his job. Very, very effectively. He's obviously an excellent player, and thought Foden had a decent cameo as well. So every decision was vindicated. And one more thing I'd like to talk about with Maguire and Stones is they have both shared experiences that are mistakes at major tournaments, and also they've both had to burden very, very big price tags at their club and deal with criticism for that. And actually, I believe they've both had very good seasons this season. And it's been topped off by an outstanding English campaign. So credit to everyone, credit to Southgate, credit to the staff, team. It's lovely for the fans. Obviously, it's hard, isn't it, if anyone listening to this who isn't English, to really understand the relationship that England fans have with the team, because our golden generation has already been. And it didn't happen. And that's a really, really demoralising thing. And Belgium will have it, actually. But they actually done way better than England's golden generation. Like, we had a midfield of Gerrard, Scholes and Lampard. Of all time. And you know, that wasn't just limited. Like, Rooney and Terry and Sol Campbell and Ferdinand and Beckham and Michael Owen. And the list goes on. And on, like, the greatest English players that have ever played were all in the same team. It didn't work. So we've been there to experience that, not even qualifying out of group stages of tournaments. And now our golden generation, to use that, you know, cliched phrase, is the unified team. And it's really nice because these are young guys. And if they win the Euros, there's a very, like, England have got back-to-back semi-finals and now final. And I don't think the team's as good as it will be at the World Cup. I think the team at the World Cup is going to be the best England we've seen.
I think the limited amount of time now between the Euros and the World Cup, I think, will help England.
Yeah,
me too.
Won't
be that massive gap of time there's been between the World Cup and the Euros where it can maybe stagnate a little bit. I think there'll be a sense that psychologically this team will know we can go far in a tournament, we can beat a Germany, we can get through adversity in moments, and the younger players within this group will have an extra season and a bit under their belt. So a Mason Mount, from a Chelsea perspective, hopefully will have maybe a Premier League title.
Just to add to what we're saying about leadership as well, like, you know, Saka's won an FA Cup, Foden's won Premier Leagues, Reece James, Mason Mount, Chilwell, they've won Champions Leagues. Like, there's young winners in the team. A lot of the youth, the players who've played at youth teams have won things. Even players like Bellingham, you know, he won the Pokal. And that's what I'm saying. I can't. Bellingham, we've got a midfield of Rice, Bellingham, Henderson, Phillips, like that. That's really, really good. It's really good. Like, there are at least two players there in Rice and Bellingham that could be top five in the world in their position. Could be. They're not yet. Obviously, I don't think Rice is world-class. I think those shouts are a bit premature. Calvin Phillips is also going to reach a very high level. And Henderson, I personally am a massive supporter of Henderson. I think he's been world class for Liverpool for a few seasons, and unfortunately his injury's been tough. So everyone's there, everyone's being guided. The tough thing will be who is going to be the backup centre back. I reckon it should be Tomori, but that, you know, partly there's some bias there. It depends who's performing the best, but those issues to think about later on. And yeah, I guess finally it's lovely to see Luke Shaw having a great time. Obviously, I want to see Ben Chilwell get minutes, but if I'm honest, I don't think he's going to be complaining too much. He's just won a Champions League.
Ben and Reece getting a lot of rest right now is...
It's perfectly fine.
It's perfect for Chelsea. Like, I'm not complaining. Yeah. Anytime a Chelsea player hasn't played in this tournament, I've been relieved, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So it is what it is. I mean, there's a chance now on Sunday for Sterling to win player of the tournament. I don't know. Can Kane win the Golden Boot? I believe Sterling could as well. Lukaku has 4 goals. I think Ronaldo has 5. Kane's got 4. Okay, so
Kane's going to have to... Yeah, Kane could. I mean, but I think that, you know, obviously I think it'll... Mostly, I think it'll be defined by one goal on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be gross, isn't it? It's going to be grim. Kane versus Chiellini is something I'm very much looking forward to seeing, though. Because Chiellini's been one of the best defenders of the 21st century, and he's on his sort of last hurrah, and Kane is roaring into form. So it's going to be really exciting. It's going to be very nervous. Do you know what? I'm not as nervous as the Champions League final, though.
No, I was having a discussion with my dad. Chelsea is just not the same. I don't have to dread before the England game. I had a headache after the England game. Like, it's tense watching it, but like, it's not the same as Chelsea. I'm just enjoying it, you know, just being able to say, like,
same here.
The experience of, like, say, my dad and especially like my brother as well, like, of Euro 96 and feeling for years, like, oh, will I ever get to experience a summer like that in my life? Like, and, you know, I'm just glad that I have been able. I mean, as a Chelsea fan, the fact in May we won the Champions League and I could see my nation win the Euros is kind of just a bit ridiculous, isn't it? So
it is unbelievable to think about. But yeah, I'm similar to you. I'm able to enjoy the ride that is England, whereas the Chelsea one is less enjoyable.
Yes, it's not enjoyable watching Chelsea. Is not enjoyable. Like, it's in most of the time it is. I'm so enjoying this off season at the moment.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, like we said, England through, credit Denmark. They've done themselves immensely proud. And if they went through, they would have been worthy finalists. But yeah, the big game Sunday. Also, we've got Thiago Silva competing in the Copa America, but I believe most people want Argentina to win, so Messi gets something.
No, I want Brazil to win.
I couldn't care less who wins.
I haven't watched any of the Copa America. I just, you know.
No, me neither. The thing is, I'm not awake.
I enjoy sleep.
Yeah, I think it's on 1 o'clock. It's either 1 o'clock Sunday morning or like as Saturday edges over into Sunday with that 1 o'clock. So yeah, that whilst I've explained the time terribly for some reason, yeah, it's it would be lovely for Thiago Silva to win a Copa America again, and same year's won Champions League for what he is, and obviously Messi as well, who I know Daniel disagrees, but I think he's the greatest player of all time. So it'd be nice for him to win an international tournament.
I don't generally disagree. I've always preferred Ronaldo.
It's fine. I understand. Yeah, I understand. Don't worry. He's one of those guys. That's why he's a PSG fan, everyone.
You can't change the narrative now, Jay. Everyone knows you're a PSG fan, so there's no point trying to change the narrative now. And two of your favourite players have gone to PSG in Ramos and Donnarumma, so it's a great summer.
Oh, I know. I know. Do you know how peak that is? Because you start doing me on Twitter, putting hundreds of likes on my head. And then especially Ramos, one of my favourite players ever, has gone to PSG. Like, he's the most evil guy, and obviously he would go to that shit club. So, you know, it's not relevant to an England podcast.
Hakimi, you know, an inferior right wing back, has gone to PSG as well because he couldn't handle the heat of Reece James. So, you know,
I think they might win the Champions League next year, but who knows? So, do you want to do a score prediction for the final?
I'm not a score prediction guy, so.
So, what's your score prediction?
I don't have one. An England win.
Okay, I'm going to go for an England win as well. But yeah. Well, like I said, at the end, well, like I say, at the end of every episode, thank you so much for listening. Make sure you tune in next time, whenever that is. It will probably be post Sunday, where we will talk about the England game again, because we can't really not talk about the England game. And yeah, let's just hope that, let's hope it comes home. Let's hope I remain dehydrated on Twitter for all the salt that I've been crawling through, you miserable non-England fans. Yeah. So, so yeah, we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening. Like, rate, review, follow us on Twitter if you want. If you don't want to, don't bother. Go and subscribe to Daniel's YouTube channel. That's something you should definitely be doing, because we're on the road to 25K now. So let's be doing that, and we'll catch you all next time.